And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we are back here on Monday Night Talk. And
we're back.
Just a small apology to my co-host is I didn't give you an opportunity. You actually wanted to kind of do a little bit of acknowledgement.
Yes, I know we have a guest on the line, and we want to get to him in a second, but I wanted to give a shout-out to a good friend, one of our younger listeners who's tuning in tonight with his mom, Jack. We want to say hi to Jack, a second grader. So hope Jack's doing his homework. Future
voter in the district?
Yes, okay. There you go.
Good to know.
Shout-out to Jack. And I guess a welcome to our next guest. Take it away.
You were actually excited because you've done a little bit of research on our guest who's joining us for a few moments.
Yes.
You're like going, hey, I went to the premiere.
I know. This is exciting. I know we're here to talk about a most recent issue, but The Finest Hours, many of our listeners may have seen that film, which was filmed, a great part of it was filmed here on the South Shore. Mm-hmm. There's a scene in Duxbury, a scene down the Cape. Our guest was one of the authors of that book.
So. Casey Sherman.
Casey. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me tonight. Appreciate it.
I got to say, I started the show off, Casey, by going, yes, I know, it's almost like Casey's becoming a co-host, but because you were here last week, we had you talk last week about the big event in Quincy, and I saw that went well.
Yeah, it was a great event, and we raised a lot of money for a real great charity, the Heather Abbott Foundation, which provides prosthetic limbs for those who can't afford them.
And you actually had, you and Dave had days proclaimed after you, is that right?
Yes, that was a shock and a surprise, but it was a nice event, and they proclaimed whatever day that was as Casey Sherman and Dave Wedge Day in the city of Quincy. And again, if it can get us out of a parking ticket or a speeding ticket somewhere down the line, it'll be all worth it.
Well, I got to say, it's just the first person that I thought of after this weekend's events took place in Orlando was you. You're one of the first ones I thought of because this is becoming commonplace, not only being a best-selling author in regards to the Boston Strong book, which was about the Boston Marathon bombing, and how ironic that what we're hearing from some of the news stories is that the individual who was the perpetrator in this is somehow connected to the Zinoviev brothers. Have you heard the same thing?
I've heard the same thing, and that's always been the fear that we've had, whether or not their criminal, heinous, cowardly acts would inspire others, to commit other atrocities. And people have been using the word tragedy over the past 24 hours. I mean, I look at a tragedy as an earthquake or a landslide. This is an atrocity. And as you guys said, unfortunately, it's becoming much more commonplace now than it ever has before. And it has to be stopped. I mean, we have to put our collective minds together with the United States of America. We can do this. We can tackle this problem, but it has to be done, and it has to be a bipartisan effort. I think, you've got both sides that have immediately retreated to their political talking points while, the bodies of these innocent people were still in the nightclub and hadn't been brought back to their families yet. So it's sickening all around to me.
Yeah, Casey, I thank you for that point. That's sort of the same, seeing the Twitter feeds filling up with some of the statements, on all sides of the political world. It's disheartening because these are people's lives and, people that, young men and women who've lost, who have families and kids, and it seems like that gets lost in the whole discussion.
And it's exactly what the terrorists want. They want to divide, and they accomplish their goal by doing something like this.
You look at this event, and I know that. And I mentioned it earlier, is when we had the incident take place in Paris, the November 2015 Paris attacks. I know that you actually traveled over there and you had a chance to kind of see what was happening after it happened, right?
Yeah, I did. I was on assignment for Fox News, and I was trying to do a story about how Paris was responding to that murderous attack with regard to how the Bostonians came together. And in Paris, I took some photographs right in front of the Bataclan, again, a concert hall where 100 people were massacred. And it was amazing to me just the outpouring of love that I saw on the streets that day from the Parisians. Many of them were, absolutely traumatized because it was a crime so fresh, and I could tell that many of the people that were showing up for the memorial had lost loved ones inside it. but to see the way that they came together and that they held each other through this nightmare, you know, to me it symbolized why they'll never win, why the terrorists will never beat us, because, you know, and I hate to sound preachy, but love does conquer hate. There are more of us than there are of them. However, we have to stop them. And that is, I think, the primary goal, you know, from whomever is going to be in the Oval Office, you know, in several months. That is the primary goal.
How does this galvanize us as Americans with this particular incident? How is this closely tied to what the Parisians did back in November?
Well, I think it's, you know, to me, seeing that these poor innocent people were members of a minority class, the gay community, and to see the outpouring of love already from people across all divides, people that, you know, put their prejudices aside, possibly their hatreds aside, and come together, you know, to help these families grieve and help these families recover. I think that's, you know, a positive that comes out of such an absolute horrendous crime. But I think, as I said, we need to do more. We need to make sure that these, you know, AR-15s, the so-called mass destruction weapon of choice for these spree killers, should not be readily available for someone, especially someone who was on the FBI's watch list. I mean, again, you compare Orlando to Boston, you know, there are so many times that the Saranaia brothers were investigated on the radar, yet allowed to slip under the radar and commit an atrocity like the Boston Marathon bombings. It's the, you know, very similar theme and narrative, unfortunately, for this latest criminal act.
Casey, you just brought up exactly the point I was going to ask about. You've written a book, A Boston Strong, A City's Triumph Over Tragedy. And there's been some loose association with the Saranaia brothers. What are you hearing about that? And what was it like to, you know, what kind of parallels would you draw from the two different atrocities?
Yeah, I mean, whether or not, this latest terrorist was merely inspired by the Saranaias, and the Saranaias have been inspired by other terrorists. Mm. You know, we knew that Tamerlan Saranaev had terrorist training. We knew that. You know, that's not part of the narrative that that the, you know, mass media likes to portray, but our research showed that that he did have the type of training one would need to pull off two bombs on Boylston Street in 2013. Whether or not the terrorist that we're dealing with now was just homegrown or inspired via the internet, much like the Saranaevs were as well. You know, the bottom line is all of this material, all of these, bastardized philosophies, they're all readily available at anybody's fingertips at any given time on the internet. But I think what we have to do, again, we have to make sure that our law enforcement agencies are keeping a much closer eye on these persons of interest, and we have to make sure the firearms stay out of their hands. I mean, it seems to be a pretty simple solution, even though we're already seeing how difficult it will be because of the partisan politics that we have to deal with in today's society.
No, this isn't the, we look at this shooting, but we look back, was it about less than a year ago where we saw the shooting in, was it Santa Monica?
San Bernardino. I'm in L.A. right now, and I'm here on business, and they arrested a man who was...
going to the Pride Parade.
Yeah, it was the Pride Parade. So they arrested a man in Santa Monica yesterday who was headed to the Pride Parade, which is in West Hollywood, with a car full of ammunition to do maximum harm. Fortunately, they got him. Otherwise, it would have been another nightmare situation for the people of Los Angeles, as it has been for the people of Orlando and the people of San Bernardino. These things are becoming more commonplace. The same weapon used in San Bernardino is the same weapon used in the Orlando nightclub, and we have to take these weapons out of the hands of the terrorists.
Is it that simple, though?
I don't know if it's simple. That's not my, you know.
Right.
There are people that are paid well that have that should be coming up with that kind of solution.
Mm. Jesse, our producer, actually has a question.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it sounds easy. It sounds like a great solution to take the weapons out of their hands and restrict, you know, people that are on the terror watch list from getting AR-15s. But let's keep in mind the attacks that happened in Paris. They aren't allowed to have guns in Paris, and they got them anyways.
Well, I understood, but does that mean that we can't be more vigilant? Does that mean we have to have these weapons readily available at gun shows across the United States? No. I mean, you're getting the excuses that, bombs also kill a lot of people as well. Well, I know they do. And so do AR-15s. There's no reason for any sensible person, and this is my stake on it, if you guys are asking me a question, I'm telling you the answer, that any sportsman, should have an AR-15. And I don't understand it. You know, if you're a hunter, I get it. You want a rifle, you want a pistol to protect your home and to protect your loved ones, fine. You don't need an assault rifle. You don't need a personal weapon of mass destruction, and that's what these weapons are.
Well, then if you're going to ban AR-15s, do you ban handguns, which are responsible for more murders every year in the United States?
Not more mass murders there, my friend, okay?
Well, you also had airplanes that caused mass murders in 9/11. There was no AR-15s involved then.
Again, you're going back to your, talking points, and I've been reading them on Twitter over the past 24 hours. I mean, that to me is just a silly argument. You're smarter than that.
Go ahead, Josh.
Casey, hey, Josh. So just back to the larger issue, I guess, you know, as a policymaker, this is something we grapple with. And last year, I still remember, I'm in my second term, and right after I had orientation when I was first elected, there was the terrible tragedy in Sandy Hook.
Yep.
And, kind of changed.
Again, not a tragedy, an atrocity.
I'd say both. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Point well taken. There's always the public policy aspect of that we grapple with, and it's not an easy, solution. You just saw the mini discussion there, but mental health...
It's not supposed to be an easy solution.
No, not at all.
Mental health, it's a compounded problem. You're absolutely right. Right. Are there mental health issues that have to be addressed? Absolutely. Everything has to be on the table, but it has to get done. You don't just talk about it and say it's too difficult of a problem to address. Because you do that, more of these things are going to happen, and we're all going to be, holding our hands up and calling it, this is such a tragedy, RIP to the victims. RIP. These victims aren't resting in peace. When you're 99 years old and you die in your deathbed, you rest in peace. Right, these people were slaughtered. They were massacred. Why am I angry? Because I've seen it.
Again, we're speaking with the best-selling author Casey Sherman, also somebody who was reported for numerous outlets, especially when it came to the Paris attacks. Jesse, did you have another question?
No, I agree with what you're saying, and the underlying message is we need to stop the attacks, and, I don't mean to come off as some crazy conspiracy theorist when I say, like, putting a ban on AR-15s isn't going to do anything when I say that more murders happen via handgun. But the point is, if they were going to kill people, they're going to kill people, and it's better to focus on how do we stop them from killing, not how are we going to stop people from getting guns.
Well, I think you do both. I don't think one is... alien to the other. I think that you want to make sure that these weapons are not readily available for people that are looking to do mass harm. And again, I'm not saying ban firearms. I'm not saying that at all. Mm. But I'm saying make certain that certain firearms, an AR-15 is not available to the public. I mean, let's face it, only the military should be using or provided a weapon like that. I don't get the sportsman aspect of that argument at all.
Josh?
Casey, I was just going to ask, just as a journalist, as someone who follows this, how do you find, I would think it would be a very difficult subject matter to as a journalist to try to, track down and get information about. How did you come to that originally, and how do you approach that job as a journalist when you're trying to, cover these atrocities?
Oh, that's incredibly tough. I mean, I think I've been fortunate enough to tell really impactful stories because I understand what it's like to lose somebody. I've had a loved one lost to murder. So I have I can talk to these survivors or these victims' families in a common language. And I think that's what has probably propelled, some of my stories up to where they are, is because these survivors and these families trust me. Because I've been there to a degree.
It is. If I could point this out real quick, I mean, you did a great piece with the survivors of the Boston Marathon. If you want to just remind folks that you had a chance to see and experience a moment with these folks when they went on a special trip to kind of unite folks who didn't know each other until this incident brought them together.
Yeah, 13 days in Paris. 6 months after the bombing, Dave Wedge, my co-author for Boston Strong, and I were invited as the only journalist to cover that healing cruise with over 100 survivors, and watching them in a natural state, not at a function, not where they're being honored, but really, you know, having those quiet moments together and being able to observe those moments and chronicle those moments, really, you know, that was a life-changing experience for both Dave Wedge and I. We made lifelong relationships and friendships with those survivors. Once they got off that boat, we got off that boat with them and then followed their stories and their lives, you know, for the next 2 years. So these people are still very close to us. They are dealing with, you know, post-traumatic stress. Anytime there is a mass shooting or an atrocity like this, you know, they relive what they've gone through. I mean, they relive it every day to a degree, but it's maximized when they're watching the news accounts of that massive loss of life like we saw in Orlando yesterday.
See, the thing thing that just keeps me thinking is so many lone wolf incidents that are taking place that we see, like Sandy Hook, like this one that happened in Orlando. Now, I know the one in Paris was more of an organized effort, but you're seeing, again, a small group of individuals who are, I was telling Josh before we started the show, have you ever seen the movie Sniper, Casey?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And there's that part where Bradley Cooper's father was at the table. This was after Bradley Cooper's younger character actually beat up on a bully who was, you know, whooping on his brother.
Right.
And he gave the analogy of what the world is like. Is there are sheep. Those are the ones that the wolf preys on. And then there are the sheepdogs, and those are the protectors of the sheep and take care of those who are the wolf. And my question, and it's a rhetorical question, is we need more people to be sheepdogs when they see incidents like this happening. And I'm looking forward to hearing some of the stories that are going to come out of what we heard, what happened down in Orlando, because I know that there are stories that took place that there could have been more lives lost. And I know that's...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are people that sheltered, you know, victims from being killed. I mean, it's amazing. And to your producer's point, you know, had someone in that nightclub had a handgun on them and was able to mitigate at least some of the massive death, you know, I'm a proponent of that. You know, I'm not a proponent of banning all weapons or firearms. I do believe that we need to protect ourselves, but, you know, my stance is these assault rifles have no place in a terrorist's hands, and we have to get them out of their hands in any way we can. So be a sheepdog, absolutely be vigilant. You know, everybody should have that mentality now in our post 9/11 world, and I think most of us do, especially in a crowded area. You know, at a baseball game or at a marathon, your head is on a swivel, as it should be. Yeah. You need to be watching, especially, you know, if you have children at an event. So that's, I think we all have to be a little more responsible, and we should be.
Jesse, did you have a follow up?
I agree with everything you're saying, and it's not like, you know, to take away anything with the Second Amendment, obviously people are not concealing an AR-15 as their concealed carry. So yeah, if a bouncer had a concealed weapon, that could have been stopped. I'm also a proponent to having, you know, if a teacher in a school is a lawful citizen and they're law abiding and they have a license to carry, then I'm for teachers carrying in schools too, because it shouldn't be a gun free zone for law abiding citizens like a teacher. You know, if some kid's going to go into a school and he has the thought that maybe, you know, a teacher might have a gun, that might stop him from shooting up the school.
And if you can give one, you know, madman or madwoman pause, you know, that's preventative, and that's what you should do. And as I said, I'm not for gun-free zones. I think gun-free zones are only advantageous to the killers out there, to the shooters. It's just how we, you know, manage it and navigate that very tricky political scale.
Well, I think the other component here that we're not necessarily mentioning, and that is the media. And I think sometimes the media could do a better job. All day, we've been hearing the father of this individual who perpetrated this, and giving him airtime as to, you know, oh, my son is not a bad person, and I think that's the last thing folks want to hear after something like this takes place. Am I
especially
wrong?
The families.
Yes.
Exactly. And that was the same thing after the Boston Marathon bombings. All of a sudden, you had Zubaydah Tsarnaev on television talking about how wonderful her sons are and what a demon the United States is. Who the hell is giving her that kind of airtime and that platform to spout that type of hateful language? I totally agree in terms of the media has to be much more responsible about who they put on air.
Yeah, and who they put on the cover of Rolling Stone too.
Exactly. You know, I think everybody has to, again, kind of look in the mirror and say, what am I doing to try to help solve this problem?
I know you got business that you're doing out there as you continue to grow and blossom as an author and probably soon to be other projects that we'll talk about down the road somewhere. But how many people have tapped you to kind of chime in for a few moments about this incident?
You know, not many, actually. But I've been very close to some of the survivors that are, you know, constantly reaching out via social media. And I want to make sure that they're okay, that, you know, that they're in a good frame of mind, because again, these are trigger points for them, and that's where my thoughts are. I'm not, you know, Dave Wedge and I aren't looking to write a book about Orlando. That's the last thing we'd want to do. Right now it's all about, again, trying to solve that very complicated problem and trying to get a city like Orlando to heal. I mean, we heard today that Disney World, downtown Disney, could have been the target of this man's mass shooting spree. Can you imagine, you know, that? So we just have to, we don't have the answers, but we should all come up with at least some workable solutions.
But see, that's the thing, you mentioning myself. I mean, I've been to Disney a number of times.
You were Disney's biggest fan, Kevin. I mean,
that is true. But you know what, though? It's a fun place to go and just relax and enjoy the day. And just think that the collateral damage, if somebody was that hell-bent, if they would have gone...
Again, right, and think about, we're talking about inspiration, aren't we? So is somebody out there, some lone wolf out there thinking, okay, well, now that becomes my target.
Right.
Disney now has to step up its security, especially around downtown Disney, where you have a lot of open areas where you can just walk right in, almost like a shopping mall type of experience, and you don't have to go through security. Well, that's gonna have to change.
Well, I will tell you, is actually my girlfriend's kids were down at Disney last week, and that has been, from what I understand, is that it is significantly tightened up with their security, both Disney and the other parks in the area, because they know that in today's world, it's ever changing, and the last thing you want to do is have something like that happen on your property.
That's right. Oh, exactly. You know, and again, you know, it's a sad state of affairs in a sad world where we live in, where we have to take those steps. But, you know, I think if families are thinking about taking their children to a park like that, anywhere, they have to be concerned. I know I would be.
Casey, as always, thank you so much for your time and your patience, and also being very flexible. I know that we had another guest that was planned, and I thought it was timely enough to have you come on and at least kind of discuss and share from previous experiences in light of what we saw happen this weekend.
No, and I appreciate that, and I think it is very timely, and I do love the debate, and I think we should be talking about it and then putting those words into action as well. So thank you for inviting me on tonight, guys.
There he is, a best-selling author, Casey Sherman, our guest, and be safe, my friend.
All right, you too.
You got it. Now, Jesse, I gotta turn my attention to you for a couple of moments. You were very much fired up.
Good questions from Jesse?
Just good questions from Jesse, but now I will one-on-one kind of chat with you for a couple of moments here.
All right.
What do you feel are some of the steps that we not only as a nation, as people, should do to combat what we're seeing here? The lone wolf, seeing what we're seeing with radicalized individuals who are, it isn't necessarily the religion, but they are radicalized by a certain religion.
Right, yeah. I think you know, it what worries me and what troubles me about the situation was that this shooter, this killer, was on the FBI's, you know, watch. He was on their radar for the last 3 years. They said that they brought him in, they interviewed him a couple times.
Yeah.
He had ties
inconclusive. That was the word they used.
Yeah.
Inconclusive.
It's just, if, and I agree with what he's talking about, to where if you have someone that's been interviewed by the FBI for possible ties to Al-Qaeda and ties to ISIS. Yeah. Last I heard, his father even had ties to Al-Qaeda. So if you have
Like a TV show that goes out to that certain group. That's what's been reported. I don't know how accurate that is.
Yes, we're trying to pick and cherry pick what is actual news and what is just speculation at this point. But
or BS, right?
I think there needs to be a line that's drawn where it's like, all right, if someone is being investigated and is on the FBI's radar for ties to ISIS or ties to Islamic terrorism or ties to Al-Qaeda, then they need to not be able to buy a gun at that point. You know, and absolutely not get a high capacity AR-15 or whatever they're getting. So to that point, I agree. But restricting responsible gun owners from their Second Amendment right is not going to help the problem. These people will kill no matter how they can kill, and we've seen it happen before. We saw it, like I said, we saw it on 9/11. They used airplanes. You know, we saw it at the Boston Marathon bombing. They weren't using AR-15s. You know, they're going to kill anyways. We have a problem with Islamic terror. We don't have a problem with guns, in my opinion.
Why? See, and again, this is another rhetorical question I just throw out there. Is why have we not, as a global society, haven't come together to eradicate this radicalized group and anybody who might be affiliated with them? Why have we allowed them to exist? Why haven't we, as how many countries are there on this planet?
Enough.
There's enough.
Yeah.
Why can't we all come? I mean,
it's a weird battle.
Does it have to be on the scale of a world war in order for us to be able to, you know, round up and you know what? Maybe something drastic has to be done. I don't know, but
listen. When
you have to set ISIS attack, I think you have to set such an example that somebody won't ever do it. They won't ever harm or preach.
You at least
such
have to.
Teachings.
You at least have to take steps. And when ISIS attacked Russia, Russia bombed ISIS. When ISIS
that was
attacked,
did you call that? Was that real?
Bombs are real.
Bombs are real, but I mean, come on.
When they attacked Paris, Paris bombed ISIS. You know, it's a bit. The problem is they're not just in one spot. They're spread out. You're talking that they're all over Iran. They're all over Iraq. They're all over Syria. So it's tough to pin. But what do? You bomb everybody? You know, I agree that force needs to be taken. And I think more force needs to be taken by the United States. It's just tricky. You know, we gave them Iraq, so ISIS runs Iraq now. You know, it's tricky, and they're making a whole lot of money.
No, because I want to say is that some of the recent news that I've heard is that that actually Iraq, with the help of the United States, have been able to push the Islamic group out of Iraq.
That's good news.
But there's elements in Libya, Syria. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're still kind of spread out. I think there has to be a concerted to hunt down. How many are there?
A lot.
Really? What's a lot? What? Give me a number.
I don't have a number off the top of my head.
Oh, then don't say a lot.
It's more than
5,000, 10,000?
I don't have a number, so I wouldn't speak on that.
Oh, come on.
Let's have some
fun here. No, I think something that needs to be done to if you bombing them is like kind of a slap. And I'm not saying that, you know, innocent people didn't get harmed in those bombings.
The numbers I'm looking at is between 30,000 and 100,000. So they don't have a very pinpointed number of who's actually ISIS.
Is that on the internet?
So it must be true.
It must be true.
It's from the FBI website. So.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That's a nice, you know, it's a...
They really set a broad
spectrum. 30,000 and 100,000. You don't think that number of people couldn't be rounded up and either rounded up or combated successfully by a multi-nation effort?
I'm with you. It's just which nations are willing to get involved. This is the problem that
I mean, how many people have to die before a major action is taken?
I would prefer
Do you have to stick a figure like a Saddam Hussein? Or do you need to put like a figurehead as a part of it in order to make it a reality?
I would like it to be a reality right now because I would like to see more action taken. And this is why, if I'm looking for who I want to be president, I want someone that's actually going to stand up to them, identify them for what they are, which is Islamic terrorists, and go fight ISIS and not be afraid to go fight them. Mm. And so it's preferably someone that's not taking a ton of money from countries that support ISIS.
And again,
which will remain nameless.
And this again, this is Jesse who's producing the show tonight, and I thought we had a couple extra minutes as we were waiting for our guest, 7:30 guest. It would give Jesse a moment where he was kind of a little bit of,
Jesse's very passionate.
He was very passionate. That's a good word. He was very passionate. Is it just you who's passionate in there? I see Chris is kind of just standing up.
Chris is doing push-ups and stuff. He's all sorts of pumped.
I feel like I have a lot of stuff I want to say about that.
All right. You have 90 seconds.
All right. So if we get into another... Okay. Oh, thank you. All right.
Yeah, you got to hear what you're saying.
Yeah. So the problem with ISIS is the problem that we're going to have with Taliban. So is that Americans do not want to get engaged in another lengthy ground war in a state that's all the way across the world. They see it as that's not their problem. And there's no way that whoever is the president, is going to be able to send troops overseas without support for the people, because he cannot get passed by Congress without the people without the people supporting him.
Okay.
So, but the problem is, if we do send ground troops overseas, is that ISIS will just melt away. They'll disperse into local population.
Is this a prediction? Do you have a crystal ball over there?
No, it's history. It's what we saw with Al-Qaeda. It's what we saw with Taliban. It's exactly what will happen if we send troops overseas again. We'll send troops overseas. ISIS will melt away. We'll be like, yay, we won. And then as soon as we leave, ISIS will spring up again because the Iraqi military is not willing to fight ISIS themselves.
All right.
So your solution is leave ISIS alone and don't attack them?
No. I was saying it's not as cut as dry as we're making it seem.
All right. It sounds like you two have a podcast in the making. Let me know when you have a name and we'll promote it. Sound like a plan? But you both have great, Chris, thank you. And Jesse, also thank you for your thoughts and weighing in. What we'll have to do now is we're going to leave this. We'll just kind of leave this conversation right here. But it was kind of good, healthy debate. And I know Jesse wanted to get that out of his system. And I want to thank him for...
I want to thank you for giving me the platform. It's been a dream come true.
No, you haven't got my bill yet. We are going to step aside just for a few moments, but when we come back, we can talk a little Brockton Rocks right here on 95.9 WATD. You're listening to Monday Night Talk.